All right, well, I guess we'll just go ahead and get started here. Quick little introduction. My name is Colin McClure. I've been with WSE for about what, a handful of years now, 4 or 5 years now. And I manage our tool suite, our regenerative tool suite. Today, I'm covering for Holly and Chris while they're off doing better, bigger and better things. So for those of you not in the know, WSE has been doing this for about 4 years now, this meeting here, I guess you could say. And just so you know, we're recording this and it's shared. And so if anyone has any issues with being recorded, we can go ahead and edit you out. And so if so, get a hold of us. And then with that, we can also record all these meetings as well. So there's a title list of all the passable sessions when you can view those at your leisure. Yeah, any questions or concerns about that? Get a hold of us. Yeah, so then we also wanted to give a little update on all things WSE, and we are currently looking for some folks to provide some what we're calling our branch dispatch. So if you follow us on social media, you'll notice that we've put forth a couple of images and a little who's doing what and sharing that. And so you might have seen our WSE's Alex putting together Alex Blake put together a couple of those. We can go ahead and so if you're interested in participating in that, we're doing a social media campaign where we're highlighting operations across the state and across the kind of Intermountain West, and it could be any cool weather you've seen lately or any test plots or new ideas you're trying out or something interesting you've discovered, that kind of thing. So if you want to be famous and be part of our social media thing, you can go ahead and share a photo or video and brag about the cool work you've been doing. So, any questions on that, get a hold of us. So, from here, we're going to introduce Katie. Katie's going to talk about scours today and give a little bit of background on it and share with us her immense knowledge. Without further ado, take it away, Katie.
All right. I'm sure everyone is very fascinated to talk about scours. Sometimes I have a little bit of trouble with Zoom, so please let me know if you're not able to hear me, Colin, or my screen sharing is not working right. But I am the owner of Crazy Mountain Vet Service, and our mission is to empower ranchers to produce healthy, profitable beef, build rewarding relationships, and offer quality veterinary medicine to rural communities. This education that you do would be part of our mission. And also, while you are an online community, you are basically a virtual rural community. I think it fits with our mission to be presenting here tonight. I just wanted to share this slide about we have four vets, and I'm on the lower right. So, by income, by species, orange is bovine, and obviously the biggest part of all of our practices, pretty much, but especially mine, is bovine. So I spend a lot of time thinking about cows and about how to keep them healthier and try to make our ranchers as profitable as we can help them to be. This is just a little bit about me. This is what I look like at work. This is what my clients think I look like on a day off. And this is what I actually look like on my day off. So we are at the low budget portion of building a vet clinic where my husband hung the sheetrock and I did the drywall. So it seems like I look like pig pen no matter what the day is. It's either cow poop or drywall mud. So this slide is just showing kind of an introduction, and everybody on this call, I think, probably knows a lot about scours and what the symptoms are, but this is just a way to score them. So if you're not quite sure based on looking at the feces, zero is considered normal, even though it's a little soft. And then one is soft. So it's not necessarily that you would need to treat either of those. It's just different variations of normal. And then two is runny, where it spreads readily, and three is watery, so it's liquid or splattery. When I was going to vet school, we would call it painting the wall, scours. And so once they've had scours for a while, then they won't suck. They have loose manure. They get dehydrated to the point they can't stand, and they're weak. So the cause of scours, I wanted to share this because you can tell a lot based on when the calves are getting sick. So if they're really young, like less than a week old, the vets are going to be thinking about E. coli, which isn't too common, as you'll see later. Salmonella, which also isn't very common in beef cattle, but we do see it every few years. And then more likely, we'll think of rotavirus and coronavirus. Now, the Clostridium, even though it says it's most likely at 7 to 28 days, we see that in our practice basically pretty much all the time, even starting a few days after birth. So these are just general guidelines. But some of them, like Coccidia and Crypto, they will be later, especially the Coccidia, because of the life cycle, which we're not going to go into a ton, but they basically have to be 28 days or later. Then the other thing about this slide that I think is good to point out is the color. So, not that it's a for sure thing, but you can tell a little bit based on the color. So, if it's white or yellow or green or brown or whatever, if it's got blood in it, it might give the vet a little bit of a clue or might give you a little bit of a clue of what's going on. But to have a definitive diagnosis, you need to take some samples. And I feel very lucky to be a vet at this time in the world because, for one, hydraulic chutes are more prevalent. We have ultrasound and we have better diagnostics. So when I first started vetting nearly 20 years ago now, we would take samples, we would send them off, and we'd get a result 7 to 10 days later at the best. And now with PCR, we can take our samples, we can send them off, and we can get results normally within a day or two. So we have a lot better diagnostics, and that makes it a lot more fun. Necropsy, where you open up the calf and look inside, is always the best because the samples we get from that are going to show the pathology of what's going on. But we can tell a lot just from a fecal sample, whether it's culture that we send off, PCR that I just mentioned, or a fecal float that we can do in our clinic. So with the PCR, basically, you'll have the calf that's sick with scours. We'll send off a sample to the lab and they go through all this extraction and amplification and they give us the results. We can normally next day the samples and then get the diagnosis the next day after we sent them. This slide shows the prevalence of scours of the cases that were turned into Kansas State, and that's where we send most of our samples to because that they have that nice PCR panel. And also, they're working with a company called Medgene, where they will pay for the samples we send them this year to find out currently what the strains are that we're dealing with. So as you can see, rotavirus and coronavirus make up the majority of the scours that are sent off to the lab. However, crypto makes up a pretty big portion, 20% only, and then when it's combined with rota or corona, it adds on another over 10%. So it's about 30, about a third it ends up being crypto that's sent off to the lab. So I was asked specifically to talk a little bit about Cryptosporidium because several people had trouble with this in the last calving season, including some of our clients. Cryptosporidium is a very small protozoa. So if you think of the most common protozoa that we deal with in cattle is Coccidia. And Coccidia is about four times as big as Cryptosporidium. So it's very tiny. I don't think I've ever seen one on the microscope. I don't think our microscopes are that good, but so it's very small, but it causes a lot of impact. And I know this picture is blurry, but I just wanted to use it to show that part of the life cycle can go through people too. So it is a zoonotic disease, and we have had employees get sick. We have had our customers get sick. And one thing about it is the hospital might not always be on to what's going on. For example, one of our part-time employees got real sick and she went to the hospital and they did a CT and they did a whole bunch of workup and they couldn't figure out what was going on. And then she called and told me how sick she was. And I said, oh no, you have cryptosporidium. And the only reason I thought that is because she'd been working in the office where we'd had some calves with it. So one of the problems with it is that it is zoonotic. People can get it and they get very sick and can even be hospitalized. But the other thing about it is it can cause a lot of damage on your calves. There's not really any effective treatments. And so if you get it on your ranch and that it starts to go through your calves, it's going to cause a lot of damage and kill a lot of calves. Going to treatment, part of the treatment for scours is just supportive care. If it's cold out, they need to be brought in to warm up. On the other hand, if you're calving when it's really warm, if they get too hot, they de dehydrate very fast. I feel like they dehydrate faster when it's warm out than they do when it's cold out. So you might need to get them into a cooler place. Just supportive care, making them more comfortable. Electrolytes, colostrum, other treatments, and antibiotics, and we'll go into all of those a little more specifically. So this is the scours treatment flowchart we use at our office, and it helps guide us, especially if the vets aren't in and a calf comes in, then our office staff knows what to do to get started on it. So if they're standing but depressed, you can treat them with oral electrolytes, 1 to 2 quarts, depending on how old the calf is and how much it can take. And then we often treat with antibiotics if they haven't been treated, which we'll go into later. If they're not too dehydrated, we'll give them Banamine. Banamine can be hard on their kidneys, so we don't always give it right away, but once they're hydrated, we will want to give them some Banamine or Meloxicam or another anti-inflammatory. And then we see so much Clostridium problems, whether it be enteritis or which is scours or ulcers or overeating in our practice, that we give a lot of them C and D antitoxin if we're concerned about Clostridium. And then just keeping them warm. Then if we have to run an IV, we'll run fluids at a certain rate and certain fluids depending on the physical exam of the calf. And then when they improve, we give them some oral electrolytes before we send them home. Down at the bottom, it shows what we use. We mostly use lactated ringers, but we'll also make up sodium bicarb, which we often make a homemade one. We just get a gallon of distilled water and add 4 tablespoons of baking soda to it. That's something that we counsel our ranchers to do at home if they're having scours problem and they're comfortable putting in an IV. If they're not able to start an IV, or even if we're not able to start an IV, if the calf is so dehydrated, we'll do intraperitoneal fluids. And I actually learned how to do this from a rancher. He would do it instead of oral antibiotics. He would take the back leg of a calf, he would tie it up to the fence to pull the body wall away from the guts, and then just put in a 14 gauge inch and a half needle in the right sunken in area, which is called the paralumbar fossa. And you can run in fluids in 15 minutes real fast, and they absorb it very rapidly from there. So that's something that we'll do even if we can't get an IV started. So, a little more specific about electrolytes, I just took some of them off the shelf that we have so we could talk about different kinds. And in 2009, the Veterinary Clinics of North America published a book about a lot of calving problems, basically. It was called Bovine Neonatology, and it's just about everything that can happen to baby calves. And they published in there a list of the best electrolytes and what it needed to have in it. And of course, I studied that thing. It's pretty worn out based on all my looking at it over and over. But what I came down to is that you need an electrolyte replacement that uses propionate or acetate for the base. So a lot of them use bicarb. And if you use bicarb and the calf is on the cow, which we want them to be on the cow, we want them to be getting milk. There is a chance it could disrupt the milk clot and it might cause their treatment to be prolonged. It's not so detrimental that it's going to kill them or anything, but it could give them a little bit of a gut ache just from the bicarb mixing with the milk. Since we like our calves to stay on milk when they've got scours, I recommend Hydrolite or Replenish. Both of them use acetate for the base. There's other ones that use acetate. These are just the ones that are easily available right now. Epic also uses that as a base, and it comes in a nice pail, so we'll also buy that in. Now, the Diacue on the right and the SX Calf, which needs to be rolled over a little bit, neither one of those actually have a base in it. They're just electrolytes. They're not a base that will reverse what the diarrhea is doing to their blood as far as pH. So those can be used for supportive, but they're not what you would reach for if you've got a calf with bad scours. You'd want to do Hydrolyte or Replenish or Epic or something like that. But if you have one that's mildly dehydrated, you can get by with SX Calf or Diacue or something like that. So those are oral electrolytes. Another treatment for colostrum that we've been doing for a long time in our clinic and didn't really know how much it was helping is colostrum. So we were basically too cheap or too lazy or whatever to buy a bag of milk replacers. So before we would send a calf home, we would give them a bottle full of colostrum just to get them to nurse and get some energy. And we often use the one at the top in the middle, the Bovine Calf Choice Total High Cal. And we got a lot of feedback from ranchers that they were too full. When they got home, they didn't want to nurse the cow, but they were doing well. It's just that they weren't hungry. Last year, one of the other vets, Dr. Woodford, and I went to a training on colostrum, and we learned that it's actually been proven that colostrum can be a treatment for scours. So we learned the ones on the top have 100 or more grams of IgG. So we'll give them about 20% of each of those bags if they have scours. And the ones on the bottom are only 50 grams of IgG. So we'll give a scouring calf about a half a bag of each of those to treat scours. And it does seem like it helps. So there's a lot of antibodies in the colostrum plus energy that they need. And the antibodies can bind the pathogens in their gut and just help them recover faster. Another quick, just a reminder, there's a difference between a colostrum replacer and a colostrum supplement. So all the three on the top are colostrum replacers. So they would be used if the cow doesn't have any milk, or the cow dies, or there's twins and one she kicked one off, or whatever. You would want to use a colostrum replacer because if they're not getting any colostrum from their mom, they need to be getting 200 grams of IgG. So basically, you would need about two of each one of those bags over about a 6 hour period. The ones on the bottoms are just supplements. So maybe they did get some from their mom, but you're not sure how much. And you would use one of the ones on the bottom that are around 50 grams of IgG. So there's also a price difference. The more expensive ones have more IgGs also. It just depends on what you're using the colostrum for, but it's easier for us now, as since we're using it for treatment, to just use a half a bag of ones on the bottom. I just wanted to show this. It was in one of my books, but I really liked the visual. So we want to keep the microbiome healthy. And this is the lining of a calf's gut. And you can see that on the left side, there's a whole lot of things in there, like the normal bacteria of their gut and IgA, mucin, things like that, that are protecting the red guys from getting through the lumen of the gut into the bloodstream. So there's one little guy that's getting through there. You can see the red part. But on the right side, with the depleted microbiota, you can see that the defenses are a lot less, and there's four of those little red guys getting through the gut. So we want to keep the gut healthy, basically, and that's the idea behind the ancillary treatments that we're going to talk about, is keeping the gut healthy. So probiotics can do that. Probiotics are the good bacteria, and you saw a lot of good bacteria on that last visual. Bismuth, kaopectin, activated charcoal, they can be used to protect the gut lining, bind some of the pathogens, things like that. So those are some of the ancillary treatments that we can use to help support gut health during, or even some of them before, they start to have scours. Antibiotics is another thing I listed as a treatment for scours. And I'm not saying that every calf that you doctor needs to get antibiotics, but probably pretty much every calf that I doctor in the qu clinic will need antibiotics. And the reason for this is that if they're so far down that they need an IV, they're probably going to get something else also. So this is a paper that came out, I think, last year, and it's just going through a teaching hospital and the comorbidities with other diseases. So a certain percentage of them, 13%, only had diarrhea or scours, and most of the other ones had some other thing going on, some other infectious process, pneumonia, naval infection, things like that. And so the ones that are that sick, I am going to treat them with antibiotics just to prevent a secondary se sepsis. It's not necessarily treating all of the scours because, as you saw earlier in the presentation, most of the causes of scours are viruses. But when the lining of the gut is impaired, it can allow bacteria to be absorbed and they can get sepsis, they can get abscesses in their heart, they can get lots of different things that they wouldn't get normally. I will be continuing to treat the bad ones with antibiotics, but that doesn't mean all of them need treated. Moving on to prevention, the calving area, so whether you're calving this time of year through a barn or you're calving out in calving pastures, it needs to be clean. The age of the calves makes a big difference as well. So if the calves are closer in age to each other, like within 2 weeks, they're less likely to spread the pathogens to each other. For example, a month-old calf could be shedding rotavirus or crypto, or not crypto, coronavirus, and not be sick at all. But you get a newborn calf and they're just so susceptible that they will get very bad scours. So if you keep them more in their own age groups, they're less likely to get scours. And I'll go through an example of that with the Sandhills calving system. Dam nutrition, biosecurity vaccination. We're going to go through all of these in a little bit more detail. So this is an example of the Sandhills calving method, and this would be week 5. So you started off in the pasture on the left where it's 3 to 4 week old pairs are in now, pasture 1. After you calve there for 1 week, then you're supposed to take your heavies out and put them in pasture 2. You calve there for 1 week. You take your heavies out after a week and put them in pasture 3, calve there for a week. Now, then you take your heavies out and calve in pasture 4. And you just keep moving along. So there's not any calves in any group that are older than 7 to 10 days. And you can do this if you're also doing rotational grazing. There's recommendations of doing it every 10 days or every 100 calves or things like that. But just to keep the calves in each group being very close to the same age can definitely help prevent scours. I've had customers do this, and I do feel bad when I drive by on the highway and they're all out there moving cows extra times, but it really does help if you have a bad scours problem any time of year to prevent it. Dam nutrition. I just wanted to talk about this. So if a calf gets failure of passive transfer, they're going to be more likely to get any disease, scours, pneumonia, any disease. So we really need to be making sure that the mama cow has all the nutrients and energy and protein that she needs to put it into her colostrum and put it into her calf. And we really need to be her to be a good mother too. There's a lot of supplements we can buy out there, and I really think that the cow should be doing most of this work instead of us. So we need to set her up to where she's available and ready to be providing all this for her calf. If you do have to provide colostrum, this is a flow chart that one of our vets put together as far as knowing when to give colostrum and if they're assisted calving, Sometimes they'll need more because they're not going to get up and get going. Sometimes, if I'm doing a C-section, even when I'm closing up, the rancher will be milking out the cow and give it to the calf as a bottle. If it won't nurse, then, or it won't suck a bottle, then they'll just tube it just to get that colostrum in them right away. Because those calves that you help with either a pull or a C-section, they're going to be more likely to get failure of passive transfer and be sick later in life. An abandoned calf, as she put here, needs 200 grams in 2 to 4 liters as soon as possible, since you don't know for sure when they've been born. And then other times when they're just not going to get enough colostrum, you can try to not give the full amount, but you can give 100 grams at a time, or even 50 grams at a time if you think the cow has enough milk. Biosecurity is kind of a doctor word, but I think it's really important when it comes to calving. And we'll just use this visual to talk through it. So up on the left, you have disinfectants. So that's keeping the environment clean. It can also mean keeping your equipment clean. For example, your tubers and your bottles and vaccine guns. You don't want to be spreading a disease from one calf to another. So all that stuff needs to be kept clean. People driving in and out of the farm, the vet coming, all of those things can bring in pathogens. So you just need to be aware of where you're allowing people to park and drive and things like that. Our feet. So when we're walking around, we're carrying these pathogens from places. And I like to bring a different pair of boots for every different ranch I go to on a day because I would hate to be the one that carries one disease from a place to another. The picture of a dog is to remind us that dogs can spread these around too, but also it just reminds me of animals. So some of the really bad crypto cases that I've been involved with was when someone went to a sale barn and bought a calf. And so they bought a calf because a cow lost a calf and they wanted to keep her going. And then they lost 30 calves because that calf that they brought at the sale brought in crypto. Basically, don't do this. It's a bad idea. Don't buy calves at the sale barn. Another thing that we can use for prevention is scours vaccine. These are the big three commercial vaccines available: Scour Boss, Scour Guard 4KC, and Guardian. We won't get in the details of each, but they're basically all cover mostly the same pathogens. They're just given at different times of the year. As far as you can give Guardian and Scour Boss farther in advance of calving because they're oil-based, and so it takes them longer to get into the colostrum. And Scour Guard 4KC is water-based, so it needs to be given closer to calving so the immunity lasts through the whole season, hopefully. In our practice, we also do a few different things. The pictures in the middle is our autogenous vaccines that we make. We have cultured bacteria and viruses from different scours cases in our practice, and we have made these vaccines. The one is just a straight Clostridium perfringens type A, which we've found really helps prevent a lot of overeating cases. After a while, people got tired of giving type A with and also giving like an alpha C and D or another C and D shot. So we were able to culture a type C and a type E as well. And we made the one on the right, which is a Clostridium perfringens type A, C, and E, we call it. We've never been able to culture a type D. And in the reading I've done, it's more common in goats and sheep. So I don't think we probably ever will. But if we did, we would put it in there. It's just we've never cultured it in a cow. So we have the type A, C, and E. And then in the middle is one with a rotavirus type A, which I don't think we're going to make anymore. We're hoping that Medgene takes the results of the scour samples we're sending off to K-State this year and that their vaccine that they're making will have the strains in it that we want. It takes the one with the rotavirus, it takes about 4 months to make that vaccine. The other two, it takes about 2 months. And there's a minimum order, so we have to really be planning ahead. But we've gone from making about 2,000 doses a year to making about 18,000 doses a year. So we've really expanded our use of these products. There's other commercial vaccines you can give at birth. Cafguard is very effective. You give it orally against rotavirus and coronavirus. And then this last year, there was a lot of back orders in the scour vaccine. So we used quite a bit of bovine PilliShield plus C. It's a 1 cc shot. You can give it at preg test, and it works pretty good too. Another way to prevent scours is just basically common sense. Isolate the sick calves. Don't let them contaminate your feeding area. Treat them fast so they're not shedding all over in the environment. Promoting gut health. So that's the microbiome I was showing in that one slide. You can do that through biomass, probiotics, things like that, that will help promote gut health. Decrease shedding. Rumensin and Bovatec, a lot of people will start feeding that about 2 months prior to calving, and that helps the cow decrease their shedding of crypto and coccidia. So cows can shed those normally and not really have any disease, but then when the calves pick them up in the environment, they get very sick. So you can use some feed additives like Rumensin or Bovatec to help prevent shedding for those. This is just a quick slide since we do use antibiotics to treat scours sometimes. As everybody knows, the rules changed this year, and now all medically important antibiotics are prescription only, so you need to have a good relationship with your vet to get antibiotics. And this is always my question slide because I think it's funny. I got a call to go out. This cow was dragging the panel trailer around the pasture by her nose, and she had hooked the safety chain through her nose, so we got to make a little krill out of the panels and pull it out. So if anyone has any questions, hopefully there's something in the presentation that got you thinking and we can have a discussion.
I have a question, Katie. Can I hop
Hey,
on?
Lily.
How are you?
Good.
So I am horrible at starting an IV usually. So I've been sub-Q fluids a lot. Is that beneficial at all, or should I
No,
relearn?
it's definitely beneficial. We use sub-Q fluids a ton in small animals because their skin is really loose. And I've done sub-Q fluids in cattle too, but you have to poke so many places because it'll only take so much in a certain spot and it's a little bit slower to absorb, but it will be absorbed and it will be efficient. It just takes several needle pokes. And sometimes, as you've probably experienced, if you get too much in one spot, you'll pull the needle out and it'll start leaking out, things like that. But
Yeah.
if you're comfortable doing it, it is an effective way.
Okay. And my second question was on the retail facilities and technician for selling antibiotics. Do you have an update on?
So the last time I checked in, they said they were about ready to go live with that, but we're having a
Okay.
Board of Vet Med meeting on Friday. And so I'll find out more about that and what the application is like. And I would think you would be perfect to sign up for it and you should do it soon.
Okay,
So
cool. Yeah, I would love to.
maybe give me a call. I th guess the meeting's on Thursday. Call me after Thursday.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Hi, Katie.
Hi, Wyatt.
So on the Sandhills calving method, we do that. We're calving when they're on grass in May. And when can we start grouping those pairs back up? Like, how long do they need to be separate?
I th the they should be at least a month old. Like the youngest ones should be at least a month old.
Youngest one's month old.
Yeah,
Okay.
because then they're out of that time when they're really susceptible.
Okay. Great.
Do you move the heavies, Wyatt, or do you pair them out?
We move the heavies. So yeah, just depends on how fast they're calving, but it might be as fast as every other day or as long as a week. But we just pull the heavies out and just drop the pairs back and keep going that way.
Good.
It really makes a mess out of a grazing plan, but it's better than a bunch of sick calves.
So, did you notice when you started doing it that your sickness went down?
Yes, because before Before that, we were calving in April, so it was earlier, and they were just set. We would pair out then, and then all the pairs would go into one pasture. And then we would move the pairs out of that pasture and then move young pairs back into that same pasture. And it was
Right.
like,
So it was
you can
contaminated.
imagine. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's gotten a lot better since we've done that.
I'm sure it's a lot more work, but in the long run, it's so much better for the calves.
It's actually way easier than pairing out.
Oh, good.
So we have some of the old wagon wheel designs where we've got like eight pastures that feed into a corral. And so the cows get used to it. So basically, we can just show up and just start bumping on them a little bit, or maybe even call them. And then we can just sit at the gate and just hold the ones back that have calved and let the heavies in. And they just go into the corral and sit there. And then we make sure we're fairly clean. And then just turn the heavies out into the next pasture because they're on grass. So that helps because they know they're going to fresh grass. And so the hardest part is just holding the pairs back sometimes.
Gotcha. I'm glad you mentioned that you're calving on grass because a lot of people think that if they calve on grass, they're not going to have any scours problems, but you still can. It's still the same pathogens, and it's almost like they get sicker faster because it's warmer and they get so dehydrated. So I'm glad you mentioned that it's not just calving this time of year that lends itself to having scours and other sickness.
Yeah, we've still had some issues in the past, and it doesn't completely solve that problem. But I do think for us anyways, the nutrition on the cow is better just because they're on better feed rather than on hay. And so that we might get some benefit from that too.
Yeah, I bet you are for sure.
Hey, Katie, nice to see you again. What antibiotic would you give a calf? One, and then I forget my other question, but start there.
Well, yeah, that's a big enough one. It depends on what pathogen you're suspecting. Since we have a lot of Clostridium around here, penicillin is one of my main ones that I'll go to. If I think a calf has Clostridium perfringens, any of the types, my go-to treatment is to do penicillin orally because I'm trying to kill off some of the, actually kill off the bad bacteria in their guts causing that. And then I'll also do it in the muscle. And then I'll also take C and D antitoxin and give that orally and sub-Q. So that's if I'm selecting, if I am suspecting clostridial. Now, if I am not sure what we're dealing with, I don't think it's clostridial, I think it's one of the other ones, and I'm only doing antibiotics to prevent that secondary sepsis, then I'll pick something different. We've used LA200, which you just have to be careful if they're dehydrated because it can be hard on their kidneys. We'll use a little bit of Nuflor or Resflor or things like that. Basically, any broad spectrum antibiotic that is legal to use for diarrhea. There are some that are very effective, but aren't necessarily legal or have long slaughter withdrawal, so we don't use those. We don't use gentamicin, we don't use Baytril, we don't use Exceed and things like that for scours cases because those are medically important antibiotics where we're not allowed to use extra label drug use. And so we take that very seriously. We want to keep the antibiotics we have now. We want to keep them effective for people and for animals. So we are very diligent about following the laws because we're not coming out with new antibiotics very often. We need to keep using the ones we can. We use Draxxin quite a bit anymore, which I feel like Draxxin's used for everything now, but it is a good broad spectrum antibiotic, so that's another one we'll go to for scours.
Thank you. And then the other question I remembered, can you talk more about or when you would use Banamine or when you would choose to use Banamine or not because it affects their liver? Because we just use Banamine for a lot of things.
So it can be really hard on their kidneys, but If they're once they're hydrated, like if you give them oral electrolytes and they're not too dehydrated, you can look at their eyes to see if they're sunken in. You can do a skin tint, things like that to assess how dehydrated they are. But if they're up and running around, they're probably not too dehydrated. They could take one shot of Banamine. We don't do Banamine in baby calves for more than 3 days in a row because you'll have a risk of giving them ulcers and hurting their kidneys. If they have blood in their diarrhea, I'll for sure do Banamine because it has been shown to improve the outcome. Or meloxicam. We do a lot of meloxicam anymore, also. It's just another anti-inflammatory. It's in a pill. And in fact, I have a client that she'll make a little cocktail. So she'll put some meloxicam in there and some scour pills and whatever she wants to do. And I'll get back to this, the oral antibiotics too for you. But if you have one that's down and out, you're going to want to get them hydrated before you give them Banamine. But I bet the ones you're treating are mostly up and running around.
Yeah.
I sulfa pills, we use those a lot orally for scours, and they do work well. There's the oxytetracycline, the tetracycline boluses, which we haven't been able to get lately, but those are also good for scours. But I'm most likely to do either penicillin orally or just do systemic antibiotics because of the bugs that I'm treating. Unless I think it's coccidia, then I'll do amprolium, which is a specific treatment. And there's a 5-day treatment dose or a 21-day prevention dose, which in baby calves, we mostly do the 5-day treatment dose. Although I found in a book one time, if you do 6.5 times the treatment dose, you can do it as a one-time treatment. So we do that a lot in pasture situations where we may not catch that calf again. And normally we're doing that when we have a high suspicion that it is coccidia. So either a history on the ranch or confirmed by doing a fecal float. And in those cases, I often do give them sulfa because it does help with coccidiosis as well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I have another question for you.
Sure.
Oh, on the dairy side of things, we do sell a lot of bum calves to people. Like, these are healthy calves. But when you like your sale barn, I was like, oh, I just always want them to have the most success. And I'm always just, they're vaccinated, they're coming from healthy cows, but isolate, obviously. Like, how long, if you're taking a bum calf from me, like how long would you isolate her before you?
I would for sure want to keep them away from the herd for at least 2 weeks, and probably a month would be better, just like Wyatt's question about when you mix the calves from
Yeah.
another thing from Sandhills calving. But also, and I don't know enough about your operation to know this, but the main things we worry about with calves from dairies are Salmonella and Cryptosporidium. So if those haven't been problems on your place, it's not
Yeah.
very likely that you're spreading those problems to other places.
Okay.
So you're probably doing all right there.
Okay.
The other thing is that sometimes we worry about getting frozen colostrum from a dairy because a lot of dairies have yonis. So that's another thing to worry about. But if none of those are problems on your place, I wouldn't worry a whole lot about it. And I'd actually rather have someone go to another ranch, like whether it's your dairy where you're actually concerned about this, or go to a neighbor or somebody and get a calf than to go to the sale barn. A lot of those calves are actually born in the sale barn. Who knows what kind of colostrum they got? It's just not a great place to go buy a calf.
Okay. Good to know. Thank you.
Good question.
Katie, can you hear me?
Yep.
Middle of June to late June, we could get some hot days, and we'll have 3 to 5 day old calves that are healthy. And it's only happened 3 or 4 times, but if you find the really runny manure, white manure, just scattered on the ground. from a calf. Typically, if we don't find that calf within a few hours, he'll be dead by morning. Or what do you think that is?
I would think it's probably either rota or corona or maybe clostridial. But it would be a really good opportunity to do some diagnostics and find out what it is.
Yeah. It happened last year and on about three calves and about the same year before. But so this year we'll be prepared and do something. We'll get
Because then you might be able to target your treat. You might be able to target your treatment a little bit better, or there's probably things that we could do for prevention too.
So far, we haven't treated them. We haven't got to them. They're still nursing, and you think, oh, they're okay, and they're still moving pretty good. Next morning, they're dead. But it's typically a hot day and a colder night.
Yeah, those weather extremes are just so hard on baby calves.
And it only happens with, it seems like, that last little bit and a calving.
And that's also because the way you calve, all your calves are in the same pasture. So the older calves are probably spreading it to the younger calves. So if you did some like Wyatt's doing, you probably wouldn't have any trouble.
Yeah, and we did that last year. So this group was isolated, the tail enders.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, and that's where it showed up. But I don't know. Well, I'd love to do some stuff. When we find it, hopefully we
easy
don't.
To do.
Okay.
Good question.
Bet you'll be happy to know you shared her picture.
I was hoping you'd see that.
Yeah.
Hi, Katie. This is JD Stensland up in Wolf Point. We were one of those unfortunate bad cryptosporidium cases last year. Bought a bunch of calves that come out of Minnesota to put on heifer calves and or on heifers. We were calving about 500 head of heifers. I would say every single calf got it. We're towards the end, we were in seven different pastures, just small groups. Weather was a bugger. We lost about 160 calves. We treated with everything from tetrazoril, tannic acid. We tried everything. Anything somebody would come up with, we'd try it. We were treating piles of calves every day. So I'm not calving there this year. We have two big barns and it's really nice calving facility, but we're not going to calve there. And I've done a lot of research. There's a Dr. Don Sockett. Yeah, at University of Wisconsin, talks about, he's got a lot of sanitation stuff out there, cleaning stuff and using chlorine dioxide. It's the only thing that'll kill crypto. Is that right?
Yeah, it's really hard to kill. I thought that there were some of the hydrogen peroxide type ones, which is probably chlorine dioxide is related to that. But like your regular bleach and the regular stuff that we do doesn't work. And then you think about like our calving environments. It's not like you can clean wood very well or disinfect it very well or the ground or things like that. So there's so much organic matter that it makes all those disinfectants not work as well. So it will be a challenge for you. And also those protozoal spores can live for a long time in the environment.
We've heard that. The stuff we read was it survives from -4 to 160 degrees. But there's been some vets out in Minnesota that left some scours, crypto type scours, on a panel or something at 50 below. And they'll sample it 3 days later and there's live parasite activity there. I guess one of my questions, we found there's nothing to treat it. When you have it, We were just thinking scours, and we should have just eradicated the first pen of 40 that we had them isolated, and honestly should have just got rid of that whole pen and buried them, and we would have been better off. But going forward, I bought several semi-loads of lime, and we were spraying peroxide because that's what we thought, in big sprayers, ordered a pile of it. And we burned, and we hauled our manure out like in August when it was hot and dry. Instead of trying to incorporate it, we got it to hilltops. We did a lot of burning, but can we even calve there next year? It was such a hot spot. What are the chances? It's a tough question, but.
It is a tough question. And I don't know the answer for sure. All I know is that in the places that we have had it on our ranches that we deal with, they don't have it again the next year. But they didn't have it. The one herd that I had, and actually it's the same. They did lose 30 calves, and they were probably calving 100 head. And so your 160 compared to your 500 head would be pretty proportional. But it just wasn't the contamination built up. But what I'm wondering is if we could try to culture some areas in your calving shed to see if we could pick it up. And I know it wouldn't be a for sure thing, but with the PCR testing being so sensitive, I'd like to do some research on that and ask some of the labs if there's any way we could check into it. And maybe a negative result isn't a be-all end-all, but if we got a positive result, we'd for sure know that we needed to wait longer.
So we did a bunch of soil samples, and because this vet out of Minnesota, we have a really good vet in Sydney, High Plains Vet Clinic. They're outstanding. Yeah. But they don't deal with crypto a lot, so we ended up, by their advice, we found vets out in crypto country, middle of the dairies. And so we took a bunch of soil samples, but we haven't found a lab that would take them even yet.
Gotcha.
Yeah. That's the tough part, because they ask how bad was it, and you tell them.
I don't know what your management situation is, but would you ever consider feeding something like Bovatec or Rumensin or something to see if that helped?
It would be easy. Like it was just such a gut punch, because we have very strict, clean protocols. We calve a lot of cattle, but we don't have more than 50 head in a group. We keep things isolated. We keep fresh bedding, and then this come in and it. So our protocols, I feel, are fairly safe, but feeding Rumensin or Bovatec would be easy, but we haven't had any cattle there since May. Like I just throw up in my mouth when I think about doing that again.
Yeah.
So we haven't even taken anything there.
Right. I can't imagine it would be a problem after 2 years, but I don't want you to have to go through that again either.
No, yeah. But I might ask about the PCR testing and kind of push that, but more for next year. I'm not doing it this year. It's just not going to happen. But
yeah, I'm talking to labs all the time too. I'll see if there's a place that would take the soil samples, even if it was on an experimental basis. Like, sometimes labs don't want to give results if they can't guarantee them. So they will either not run the test, or they'll do a lot of language that makes you think that they don't really know what the answer is, yes or no, just to cover their butt. But if we could find a lab that would do it on an experimental basis and just say, we're not going to sue you if we put cattle in there and whatever, we're trying to find out some more information.
I would Like, if they were worried about that, I would even be fine as not even knowing the lab. Third party interim, and I don't even know where the lab is. And
yeah.
Because the soil samples we took were like ground zero was barn, the first barn where these bums come into, and we grafted all them bums in that one barn. And then each pen, each barn got tested, each pen, pastured hot spots, windbreaks, a real broad soil sample. And so I'd be fine even staying out of it. Here's the dirt.
Yeah, exactly. One thing that I think is, not that it helps you out at all, but it's always confusing to me on the places that didn't buy a bum, how they got it. It will show up sporadically. It's usually not, doesn't cause the death losses that you experience, but once in a while, it'll show up sporadically in some of our clients. And I'm worried about the other contamination, like our boots or our trucks or things like that could be spreading it.
We had one test was our feed tractor. We had some cattle that weren't even here yet, and we took them 2 miles away when they got here. We didn't even bring them to the corrals, barns, cabin facility. But it was like the aha dumb moment. We're using the same tractor and processor and they're the same pickup horses, the same people, because we all got it too. So we're transferring around, that group of cattle got it. And it was like, it's the tractor, pickup, horse, whatever it was. So that I don't want anybody to go through that again.
No, I'm really glad you shared your experience, because I've been harping on people to not buy calves for a long time. But
that's never going to happen here ever again.
Yep. Yeah, it's just not worth it. There are other ways to add value to those young cows than to bring in something.
I don't really care if they have value from here on, even at that point.
Right.
Like, my 3-year-old kid got it. It was just a wreck. And I don't wish that upon nobody. So, yes, when you say don't buy them at sale barns, people take that seriously. Up your cleanliness protocols, the Sandhills calving method, up your game, and the stuff can. And I thought we had great protocols. We had lots of incoming cattle and strict vaccine protocol and quarantine pens, and it still happened to us. So it was a butt kicker.
Yeah, I bet you don't want to start calving again this year.
No, we haven't yet, and it's a little later this year. Yeah. We met a lot of good people in that. A lot of people wanted to help. Bought a pile of pharmaceuticals and got to learn a lot. But
yeah, I have read, which we can't get in the United States, but there is one in Europe, a Halloven, and I don't know how efficacious it is, but it would have been interesting if you could have got a hold of something like that experimentally. But it sounded like you used everything that anyone has ever thought of to use to treat it, and it's
there was something that came out of Europe, and I always tie it back to that tannic acid, but that's not it. But we had two bottles, 30 cc's of something that come out of Europe, and I honestly couldn't even tell you,
but it didn't seem like it worked.
Yeah, it's just time is what cured that deal, because then the mycoplasma issue that comes behind it, the cows were in great condition, or the heifers were, but it was July 1st to August before things really cleared up from pink eye and lump jaw and foot rot and abscesses and diphtheria and all that stuff that come behind it.
Right.
Yeah.
But, oh my goodness. I'm really glad you shared your story, because now it's not just me harping on everybody.
No, it's serious stuff. So, yeah, good topic.
Yeah, it's timely, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you see it a lot over there?
So we see it about every 3 years. And this last year was the worst year we've had ever.
There's several people over here, not several, three of us. Two of us bought the same calves, and another guy bought a different set of bum calves. Totally different deal, but.
So the herd we had that have it, they didn't buy any bum calves. And that's what is so confusing to me, is I don't know where it came from. But it has to be a fomite, like a person or equipment, like you say. And they, a lot of the people that work there got sick too, which you need all this help during calving, and then everybody's got diarrhea and is sick and so sick. And they had a small child that got sick, just like your case, and that's scary. And yeah, it's sad.
My wife's a nurse, and we put her to work hanging IV bags in the tack room. But thank you.
Thank you for sharing.
Yep.
Eddie, can you hear me?
Yep. Hi, Dan. Hi, Tammy.
Hi. So if we see a calf with scours, the 0 and 1, we don't really need to do anything about it. Just keep an eye on them. Is that right? And then.
Yeah, mostly. Although Roger kind of shared a story of one that maybe was like a 1 that he saw and then went downhill pretty fast. But so they can have nutritional scours too. And if the cow's milking a lot or the grass is starting to green up, like when we branded Jason's calves last year, if we would have treated all of them that had 1 or maybe even some 2s, we would have treated like 80% of the calves, and we didn't treat 1 and none of them got sick. You have to take it with a grain of salt what other things might be going on and the history of your place too, but you don't always have to treat. And some of the treatments too can be as much as just doing probiotics, or like the SX calf, a real simple treatment just to support their gut health and things like that.
Okay. And then if it does get worse, to get that sample, it, like, can you scoop it off the ground, or do you need to get the fecal sample direct, or?
It's best to get it direct, but we have got some results, like scooping it out of the straw. Yeah. And you don't need that much either. If we're going to do the PCR, you just need like a teaspoon would probably be plenty, but usually try to get just as much as you can. Oh, sometimes it's hard to get very much from the calf. Like there's been a bunch of times when we have a scouring calf here I really want to get a result from. And of course, when I'm like ready to get the sample, there's no poop there, and or it's all contaminated. So I'll even just take my finger in, and that's enough. Just one finger full.
Yeah. Of poop. Okay.
It doesn't take. The sample, like,
does it need to be stored in a refrigerator?
Yes.
Not my small refrigerator, but yeah.
Yes, not your refrigerator that your food is in, but your refrigerator. Or get it. That's another thing we do quite a bit, is we will fill out a lab form, and other vets I'm sure do this too, and send a shipping label to someone, and then they can just package it up and find your UPS man and ship it off. The sooner you get it off, the sooner you'll get a result back too.
Great. Thanks. Great talk.
Yep. Thank you.
Hey, Katie.
Hi, Chris.
I wanted to ask really quick. I'm sure, and I know that last year's severe winter kind of debunks this theory already, but I've heard from a lot of people this winter, because it's been so mild, that a lot of the parasites, a lot of the diseases, and a lot of sick animals make it through a winter like this because it was less severe. So is there anything to that theory that a mild winter will allow a lot of things to survive and we should be more vigilant?
For sure, when things are frozen up, yeah, they're not transmitted as much. That's why a lot of people like to calve when the ground is frozen, because some of the bugs won't transmit as much. But that weather is also stressful for animals too. Like, it takes a lot more energy just to stay warm. And so it goes back and forth. And nutrition, you're feeding a lot of hay, things like that. I don't know if it necessarily makes a huge difference. One of the things that I notice more with the warmer weather, the parasites will be moving. So that means your internal parasites. I'll see yearlings that have diarrhea or just are sick, and it can be from parasites because it warms up enough. Like, even this time of year, yesterday it was 57 degrees in Harlow. Some of those eggs out on pasture might be hatching, and if cows are out grazing, they could pick up the larvae. They could pick up parasites this time of year when normally they don't in Montana. The viruses, really, they can get those anytime, any weather, depending on the circumstances. It's just how consolidated you are. But some of the bacteria might be a little bit less viable when it's super cold. So I would guess that we're going to have about the same scours problems this year as we do most years, even if it has been warmer. It seems like we just get a different bug going when the weather's a little bit different.
Yeah, makes sense. Thank you.
Yep. I don't really have a summary, but it seems like we're reaching the end of our time.
I'd say that sounds accurate. Yeah. Nobody else has any other questions, or if something does come back up, you want to reach out to either Katie or the WSE team, feel free to do that. And yeah, any lingering questions before we wrap up?
I just wanted to say hi to Katie and tell her thank you. It was very informative.
Thanks, Jeff. Glad you were listening.
I'll throw you a lifesaver next time.
Perfect. I'll appreciate that.